Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. So today we're going to talk about work flaws that keep you back. But first, what's good, good sir?
Living the dream, man. Living the dream. Just recovering from this South by Southwest weekend. For those of you who can relate, you know what I'm going through. The struggle is real.
The struggle is very real. I also know that drinks are significantly cheaper in Austin. Well, you're probably used to that because you're from there. So you know that drinks are naturally going to be a little bit cheaper than they would be out here. Like, I remember the first, when I was at South by Southwest, 2012 or whatever it was. And I got like a rum and coke or a vodka tonic, and they were like $4.50. I was like, $4.50 for a shot? No, $4.50. I'm like, is that the minimum to start a tab? And they're like, nah, $4.50. I'm like, $4.50 for a cocktail? My mind was blown, man.
I'm wondering if you came in the happy hour window, but it is interesting that you bring that up because I ended up, I went to South by Southwest, and I've gone a few times, but I never plan anything out. I'm a, like, drifter. I just fall into South by Southwest, and I'm like, hey, there's a long line. That must be interesting. Oh, that music sounds good. Let me go over there. I don't really do all the RSVP, and you have to go to this party. Whatever. Like, party's a party at this point for me. But I bring that up because we ended up, it was like six of us, and we kept splitting up and meeting up as different groups of friends and everything like that.
Yeah.
And we ended up in this Budweiser, which is actually very cool. So I'm going to speak a little bit about that. But I want to get it right. Was it Budweiser? But like, I'm trying to look for my little tag.
Very intrigued where this story is going to go.
Well, it was free beer. It was free beer. It was free beer for 2 hours, as much as you could drink. Like, you just had to go up to the bar. But they had this, and I'm wondering if you've done this, because it was actually cool as I don't know what. When you got in the door, you got a band. And that was like your credit card. So they put the traditional wristband on you, but it was like a little chip. And then they asked you for your phone number, which I'm sure will come back to haunt me. And then you go in, you go to the bar, you're like, hey, let me get a beer. They're like, scan your card. And you just boop, and then they give you a beer.
Wait, and can you
they had
one beer?
Or did yes, like- yes, it was unlimited. And then they had a dispensary also where you could get a cup, and like get a well.
Yeah.
Yeah, this blew my mind. I was telling my friend, like, this would be really cool if you could get a wristband. Now, I mean, cool in my head, but probably very expensive in concept. And then instead of closing tabs and opening tabs at all the bars, you just have your wristband, you close one tab out at the end of the night.
Yo, someone's going to run with that, or is probably running with that in some form.
Well, they already are, because it was like, they were, South by Southwest is also, they market a lot of the new technologies and everything.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
It was like pay bar or something like that. So the band, but the only thing is it was only good for that bar. I was like, yo, it'd be cool if I could do this and I could just open a tab like at whenever I start my day, and then I close a tab when I end my day. Now, the bartenders probably feel some type of way about that, but I think it would be a really cool concept.
Yo, that is a serious drinker's app, though.
Yo, it was scary. Now, I mean, the only thing that saved me is that I'm not a big, and I know no shatas, Budweiser drinker, because that could have been a problem. There was people in there that you could tell had been there for a while, because I think there was like a VIP time where you could do it all day. Like, that's the RSVP thing. And then they opened it up for like 2 hours to, the general public. Me, lazy guy who just comes wandering in like, oh, free beer.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an algorithm that says when to cut people off. It's like, yeah, you've scanned your badge like six times in the last 90 minutes. We're going to have to put a temporary idle period on you for that.
There was a lot of droopy eyes in that party, my friend.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure there were. Yeah, that's the right noun, verb, grammar. Anyway, so if you're new to Paychecks and Balances, you'll learn that sometimes we struggle with proper English. But beyond that, we cover topics like, as I mentioned, that deal with work and money. So debt freedom, debt management, also career development. We get a lot of listener questions about different topics, but we do release those in a separate segment on the show. And if you listen today and you enjoy what you hear, think about signing up for our email list at paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive exclusive updates, show content. If we put out any digital products or guides, you'll have access to that first. If there's exciting things coming up about the show, you'll have access to that. And so we also sometimes look to our email list as kind of our test group, our board of sorts when we're piloting new things for the podcast. So anything that you would ask before we jump into this topic for today?
I just add another plug that every now and then, as I just shared earlier, we give away free billion-dollar ideas. So somebody will probably steal that app that or that I just talked about there. I should warn you that we will sue for the 10% finder's fee. But other than that, you're welcome to move forward.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that in like 2 years, because there's going to be that period where we don't hear about the company. And then in 2 years, we're going to be like doing whatever and then be like, wait a second, didn't we?
And then IPO. And it's going to be called something like balances and pay.
Well, I'm going to read someone's interview on like Fortune and they're going to be like, yeah, I was listening to a podcast that shall not be named. And there it's going to be like our idea. So I hope that never happens, but.
It is what it is.
If it does, we might have a claim. Who knows where intellectual property law will be at that time. But yeah, in terms of the topic for today, subtle flaws that keep you back at work, something that I've been thinking about a lot, I was going to say lately, but in general, where there are little things that people do that may not seem like a huge deal necessarily, but I think that they actually damage or can damage your professional reputation in some way. So I had a list of things. I'm sure you'll have stronger opinions about some of these than others. And then, of course, if there's anything that you'd like to add, we can walk through those as well. And so it's kind of so we're going to kind of run through this in the list format. You know, it's going to sound like there's some bullet points. And of course, we hope you get some value for this. And if you're doing these things, we make you aware and you understand how they might be bodying you professionally. So the first thing that I had in my list was too much apologizing. So you might be thinking, well, if you do something wrong, of course you apologize. Like that, like that's the correct thing to do. But there are a lot of times where I see people apologizing for things at work that actually aren't their fault. And I'd say that this is probably something that I did earlier in my career too, where, you know, for example, you're saying sorry on email threads to be diplomatic when the person who's making the accusation and at yeah, the person who's making the
accusation.
You see, I told you we struggle with this sometimes. They've CC'd a bunch of other people and, you know, maybe they didn't give you the right information for your project. So it ends up having errors that they're now calling out on the thread. And then you weigh in saying you apologize for the confusion and that you'll get it updated. Like, you shouldn't be apologizing for that. It wasn't your fault. And so I understand the diplomacy of it, but it then says to the other people, as soon as you say you're sorry, you're taking blame for something, and everyone else on the thread is then seeing that, even if it was something that you actually did right. And so in that situation, I think it's fair to be like, hey, I realized that I got a little bit of information that wasn't the most accurate. I'll circle back with you again to make sure that we get this right, and then I'll resend this out to everyone. So you're essentially acknowledging that there's an issue and that it wasn't all your fault without just necessarily pointing the finger. And it's a little distinction that I think makes a big difference. And I actually learned this because I've had bosses who've been on email threads and they're like, I know you did this right, or this person never got back to you way back in on the email thread. And I'm like, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal. They're like, no, the VP is also on this. You need to weigh back in and make it clear that this wasn't your fault without pointing fingers. So have you encountered this or any thoughts on this one?
You know, that's interesting. I'm glad you said that last piece because I was taking some notes. Sometimes on those, so I have two thoughts. I don't reply at all. Like, I think we kind of, I guess I'm going to say generationally, but I'd even say just organizationally, people feel this pressure that if someone replies to them, they have to reply back. Like, you ever been on the email group chat where basically two people are talking on a reply all and it has nothing to do with anybody else on the CCs?
I hate that.
Yeah, so I've been, and I had one really extreme scenario where two passive-aggressive people were talking back and forth at each other, and it was just, it was insane. And I, like, you could hear it going off all around the office because they were, like, basically trying to outdo each other. So everybody's, like, standing up looking at each other around the queue. It was like, bing, 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 bing. Like, they were going in on each other, right? So I just kind of think you really also have to gauge, like, because I've had people blatantly tell me something either wrong, misleading, or lie. I mean, I can't think of any other reason why they did it. But every now and then I have to take a step back and say, okay, I don't know why they're doing this, but is it even worth me replying to this email? Because what I wrote down is, you know, sometimes the best reaction is no reaction. I just think sometimes we get in the habit of, well, they said something to me, I need to say something back. And I don't think that's always the case. The other thing I wrote is, as a manager, and I actually learned this from one of the managers that I liked more, is taking responsibility for the team within reason. So let's say I instruct the team to do something and I know who did it wrong. If it's a group meeting or email, I'll just say that it'll be corrected. I'm not going to say, well, John, because you had the manager where they point out the person that did it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to be like, okay, what's the outcome? Like, what's our goal here? And then I'll go talk to John on a one-on-one basis. Like, it actually happened in a meeting where I was about to step up and say, you know what, I'm the one that messed that up. And he kind of saw me about to do that. And he, kind of put his hand up and he's like, I got this. And then he was like, you know what, we'll take care of that. Like, just the solution will happen. This will be fixed. And then later on, he talked to me about, because I actually have a pretty bad habit of, I don't think it's a bad habit, but if I mess something up, I feel the need to acknowledge that I messed it up.
Mm.
And I've actually trying to cut back on that because I don't think that's as important. And depending on the scenario, I might not be doing myself a favor to acknowledge that, yes, that's broken and I'm the one that broke it, versus, yes, that's broken, I'm going to be the one to fix it.
Yeah. And that's a critical distinction, both on the management front and also the taking blame front. So, I've had projects that I've been the lead on, and maybe there's inaccurate information. And because right now I'm living in spreadsheet hell. I thought as I got more senior on the team, I would move away from spreadsheets, and now I'm actually moving deeper into them.
I'm familiar with that niche of hell.
Yes, yes. And so there was a report that was run, and it didn't have the most up-to-date information from someone. And, I was just like, you know what? My bad. I'll make sure that we get it addressed. I didn't say anything about whose information was missing. So I do think when you're in that, especially when you're in more of a leadership role, and even informally in a leadership role. So maybe you don't have any direct reports, but you're the team lead on something. Taking that accountability for the group and saying, we will fix it, as opposed to saying, yeah, it looks like John didn't get enough sleep last night, and missed some numbers, but I'll circle back with him on this. You don't always need to throw someone under the bus. In fact, I try to avoid throwing people under the bus unless I absolutely have to, which that could probably be a whole separate discussion in itself.
Yeah, and I do want to clarify, if that wasn't clear, that you don't throw someone under the bus, but if specifically asked, so if my manager says, who broke this, then also don't sacrifice yourself in front of the bus either.
Well, yeah.
So I'm not going to take responsibility for someone else's error, but I try to be solution-oriented, and then when it's my error, I try not to, I guess, overemphasize that it's my error. I just say, I recognize this is an error. It will be fixed.
Yeah.
I think my problem was I was trying to take ownership. So, but from the supervisor and the hierarchy, they're more interested in it being solved, resolved, rather than, in most cases, rather than who actually did it wrong.
Yeah. And I'll definitely say I hear more, less whose fault was it, and more, how do we ensure this never happens again?
Agree.
And so the second part on this too much apologizing one was being the apologies for the delay person. So if you're constantly apologizing for the delay via email, you're one, diminishing your personal brand and reputation. And two, you're probably not the best at estimating how long it'll take you to complete something. And this has been me at different periods. I'm going to say that I am in no way flawless, but there have been the stretches where all hell is breaking loose at work. I'm working on a million different things, and then I'm getting back to people late. I'm replying to kids. Sorry for delay. Apologies for the delay. And after I did that a certain amount of times, I was kind of like, all right, there's something I need to change about the way that I'm handling my time or the expectation that I'm setting with people. Because when you become this person, then automatically when people ask you to do stuff and you tell them that you're going to have it done by a certain time, they just naturally assume that, oh, John said he'll have this done. And I don't know why I'm picking on John. Mark, well, I'll use a different name. Robert is saying he's going to have this done in one day, but it's Robert. So we know this really means it's probably going to be 3 or 4 days. Like, you don't want to be that person.
I saw a tweet, so I just have it was funny, but they were saying that adulting is basically saying sorry for the delay, although she said sorry for the late reply, until one of you dies. So I think you just have to get to a point where you accept delays happen. Delay is literally like a part of adulthood. And I do think you're right about time management is really the issue, or potentially the issue, or accurately projecting your dates. But yeah, I agree that, you know, apologizing for the delay, I mean, it's almost redundant, you know? Like, life happens. Just get it done.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd say a simple thing to avoid this where possible. Now, sometimes, a lot of times when people, you know, you want to give them a deadline, you can say a day or whatever. Like, I try to seriously build in, like, the amount of things that are going to come up between the time I respond to that email and the time I get to whatever's being asked for, even if it's just replying to someone's email about an update on where the role is. So if I know that normally it takes 2 days, I'll tell whoever I'm working with that it'll take 3 to 4. And if they ask if I can get back to them any sooner, I say I'll try my best to make it happen. So it's kind of that whole under promise and over deliver thing.
Hashtag smart.
Yeah, it just avoids that. Apologies for the delay. Apologies for the delay. Yeah, I swear there was one day where I probably wrote that in like 15 emails, and I just felt like a horrible individual. I was like, yo, all these people got to think I'm like the slowest, most unkempt, most unorganized person ever. And so I just realized how I feel about people that do that, and I definitely don't want to be that person.
Well, also similar to what we were talking about before, it might just be maybe what we're saying here. I think we're just becoming the positive affirmation guys. It's really what we're saying is active statement. So instead of apology for the delay, the update is I will get this to you on insert new date.
Yeah,
you know, that way it's saying the same information, but it's a positive spin.
Yes. Yeah. And I like that. You know, if you can say, but it's possible that within that email or that message that you're replying to, you're providing the information that they need.
Agree.
So there's that side of it too, but something to keep in mind. And then the other thing that I had here is repeatedly saying you'll do something and just not doing it. And so for me, I think of this as the, yeah, I'll take care of that person. And those people drive me knucking futs. I'll put it that way. Okay. And like some of these other examples, I've been that person where it's like, yeah, yeah. Oh, we talk about something. Yeah, that's a great idea. I'll take care of that. Yeah, that's a great idea. I'll look into that. And then you never hear back from the person. And it's just like, what happened with you taking care of that thing you were supposed to look into? And I've had a situation where, and this is an example of kind of why this is detrimental. I had a situation where someone said that they would cover on something for me. I can't get too specific because they may hear this. And they didn't cover for me on this one thing, and it created all sorts of additional complications later on. And there were conversations, and there were people looped in about it, but the person then never even apologized. Like, they didn't even apologize. So tied to the other point, the person didn't even apologize. Like they blatantly dropped the ball, and they just saw me the next day like, hey, man. And I was like, yo, you blatantly didn't do the thing that I asked you for. Why are you in my face smiling like nothing happened? I really needed that. And there were some other thoughts and some other words that were shared, but I ended up having to escalate to this person's manager in this case. And I was talking to someone who does a similar role, and they were like, oh yeah, this happens with this person from time to time. And I'm like, that's like not good. Like, you don't want to be the person who's known as being undependable. And if someone asked you for something, they have to worry about whether or not you'll actually take care of it.
Yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine. Like, there's very few things that just really anger me. Y'all know that I just don't have too many moves to work from, and my spectrum's real small. But that's just a personal pet peeve of mine, and I think it's because I'm so big and was raised on and was drilled into that your word is your bond, you know, Scarface on them. And, like, it's just insane to me that people can look me right in the windows of my soul. And, again, I don't know if you're lying, but if you do it repeatedly, I don't know what else to call. Like, I just don't understand how you could look me dead in my face and say, yeah, I'll get on that. Or I will do that. I will do this exact thing. And I know as soon as your back turns that you're not going to do it. Like, I know when you look at me in my face that you're not going to do it. It's just in a relationship, that's one thing, in a personal relationship. But just for that to be in a professional environment is just really, it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me. I know when you're walking out the door that I'm like, I'm going to have to check on that. Like, or I'm going to have to do it. Like, I'm like, he or she is not going to do it. So I literally pull up the worksheet that you just committed. I'm like, you know what? Let me get this done.
Yeah. You know, and so I tie that to, and so I'll make it even more real. So when you think about referrals or internal references, so you apply for a job somewhere and the recruiter sees that, you know, you've worked with someone who's there, and then they go and ask, hey, what was your experience working with this person? Like, you don't want to be the, yeah, he really didn't have good follow through. And I've actually seen someone get terminated for that. Like, they would get asked to do things and they just would be like, okay, I'll be right on it. And then like a week would go by and it would be like, yo, like, where's the finished product? And so these are little things that, and especially because people don't always reply. Sometimes it's kind of like, well, no one asked me for it, so I guess I'm off the hook. But more times than not, people remember that and they've taken note of it in some way or another. And then it's very easy for that to become what they associate with your name. And when it comes time for promotion talks, or you're applying somewhere where this person has moved on to, or they're talking about the dependable people in the office, and even just general performance reviews, and especially if they do 360 where they ask people that you've worked closely with about your performance, these are things that could come back and bite you.
Yeah. One thing, I'm not disagreeing, but I would clarify, because I think it's the habit of people to dismiss things based on how, if they consider it a small thing. And so, you know, what I guess struggle with, and I probably will for the rest of my career, maybe everybody does, is clearly defining things that I really do not care about whatsoever. Like, I literally, my life will be no more greater or worse, but for this action, I could not, actually, I could care less. People say I could not care less. I could care less. And it's not a big deal to me, but if it's a big deal to my boss, it's a big deal. So, like, yeah, this mainly falls under administrative things. Like, I think it's, I ask staff or folks to do something, and they're like, well, that's minor. And I'm like, but it has to be done. There is a checkbox that this has to hit. I know it's minor. I actually don't even care about it. But other people who, you know, it rolls downhill, and y'all know what rolls downhill. There's other people who care about it. So, like, it's just frustrating. I'm like, just get it done. Like, I know it's minor, but because it's minor, it's also probably easy. And you know, people have, even our listeners have called me out on this on the show. Like, I get personally frustrated. I'm like, well, if it's so easy and minor, why don't you just do it? Like, instead of, now we got to have a 30-minute conversation about how minor and small it is when it would have taken you 30 seconds to do it. Like, the I'm working on that. You know, like I said, the Lord is not done with me yet. But that, though, those are difficult conversations for me to have, where it's like when you open up a 30-second YouTube video and the ad for the video is 90 seconds. Like, yo.
That makes me want to fight. That makes me want to suplex people.
That's how I feel when I'm having that conversation. I'm like, hey, man, can you do this 10-second task? Can we talk for 30 minutes about that? All right.
Man, I worked with someone like that, and I'm trying to keep this from becoming the shade hour. But it's relevant, you know, where every time I went to that person to ask them to do something, I knew that even if it was a, let's say, 10-minute task, can you look this up and run this? I would get 30 questions. And I understand wanting to cover your bases, but there comes a point, especially like after you've been there for, I don't know, a few months. Every role is different with how much time it's expected for you to come up to speed, or how much time it's going to take you to come up to speed. And you should probably clarify that up front, even when you're interviewing. At what point would you expect that the person coming into this role would be kind of up to speed and have seen a full cycle of how things are done here? Because that's going to help gauge how much time you have to not know stuff. And because, you know, some people, they ask all those questions and they're trying to clarify, make sure that they get all the details. But then it's also not great to be the, oh gosh, every time I talk to this person, they then want to take four times the amount of time to discuss the very simple thing that I'm asking them for. So that's another good distinction to add in there. And related to this, I would add not closing the loop. So even if you assume everyone knows the details to formally close it out, so there aren't any questions. And again, a lot of this stuff, it relates to what happens via email, because I've just had a lot of email related incidents and conversations. But where maybe it's like, in my world, it may be somebody refers somebody, and they send it to the hiring manager and to me, and I say, okay, I'll check in with this person. I talk to that person. It turns out they're not a fit. The candidate talks to their referrer, so their referrer knows they weren't a fit, and the hiring manager never sees that person come into the queue. So, of course, they know that the person isn't a fit, but that's not necessarily true, you know? And so I try to stay ahead of the, hey, whatever happened with, did we ever reach out to? Even if it's just like a one or two line reply, I'll just say, hey, just to close the loop, I spoke to this person. They're not a match at this time. Deborah or whoever, thanks for sending them along. So any thoughts on that closing the loop part?
No, I actually think that is a good one. I would say that that's one that does not need to change. I do like the closing the loop conversation or email. So even if staff, because, and it doesn't have to be staff, I just say anyone in the office, if we talk about something, I don't want it to come across that, you know, I'm infallible and I don't make mistakes and, you know, I expect that of people and my standard is perfection. That is not the case. But, you know, anyone will reasonably drop the ball at some point. So that's why I like the closing the loop email. And sometimes it's a reminder, because sometimes we'll talk about something and I'll completely space and forget. So they'll reach out and be like, hey, just wanted to close the loop on. I'm like, huh. Even if it's information, I'm like, oh, I forgot we even had that conversation. It's good that now the loop is closed. So I'm a big fan of the closing the loop email.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed that, at least for me, it feels like it's become even more important when you start dealing with people who are a bit higher up in the organization, where it seems like they may not really care about it, but I just found that like they take note of these little things, and I've seen people get really kind of negatively impacted as far as their performance. So close that loop, yo.
Yeah. And you said something there that also reminded me is something that I had to get more comfortable with. Is the I'm gonna call it push, maybe the Facebook poke, but the email poke, where okay, you made this commitment, like okay, Friday I'll get that to you. Now it's Monday, and I'm looking in my email box, and that Friday email didn't come across. I used to be the wait and see guy, like all right, well they said Friday. Now if you commit on Friday. Actually, maybe Friday evening, depending on what email, what time you say. Like, if you set a time in there, I get you to close the business, but you're definitely getting something on Monday. So I guess I had to get more comfortable with also pushing things. And I used to be like, well, they said it. If they said it, they meant it, right? Like, nah, not now. Like, if you say you're going to get it to me and I don't see it, I'm checking in. So I think people have to get comfortable with being professional, because I also don't like the pushy person where it's like, hey, I'll get that to you on Friday. On Monday, they're like, hey, is it there? Tuesday, hey, are you still coming on Friday? Wednesday, hey, that Friday thing still coming? Like, hey, man, it ain't even Friday yet.
It ain't even Thursday yet.
Yeah, don't email me before Friday about the Friday project. Don't be that person. But after Friday, yes, you are welcome to harass me to your heart's content, professionally, of course.
I like that because I'm thinking now of a situation where and a lot of what I've run into deals with like chasing interview feedback, because we can't move forward until all the feedback is in. And I guess, yeah, that's not saying anything. That's too descriptive. And I've had situations where someone said, hey, I'll have the feedback in by Thursday. So I'm like, okay, you know, Thursday comes, it's not in yet. Hit them up on Friday. Like, hey, haven't seen the feedback. Hey, I'll get it to you by the end of the day today. End of the day rolls around. And then we're going into the weekend. And so at this point, we're also losing time because, you know, we're trying to move forward with this person and we can't because we're waiting for someone to enter their feedback. And I tried to be nice about it. And I think me trying to be nice about it probably cost an additional 4 to 5 days of time. So I could have said, hey, even like on Friday, just like, hey, I know you said you have it to me by the end of the day today. I'm getting ready to leave the office. We'll be on the lookout. So that the person sees that again and doesn't forget. And then that next day, if it's like, hey, I really needed this yesterday. Like, I need you to get this to me as soon as possible. And the person's like, all right, I'll have it to you by noon. And then it doesn't happen. And it got to a point where I had to be like, hey, I can't do my job without this information. And if I don't have this from you in the next 2 hours, I'm going to have to escalate this. You damn sure know if within the next 30 minutes, they got me exactly what I needed. And so it's that fear of being a jerk. You know, I do think that you give people a chance to be true to their word, but when it's your role that's on the line or it's your project that's going to be impacted, you got to be confident and willing to maybe even be that jerk and say, yo, I need this. Here's what happens if I don't get it. And then if you don't get it by when you need it, then you escalate and that's fine. It doesn't necessarily mean you're being a snitch.
Agree. Another thing that I am actually still working on is the multiple mechanisms. So it's also like they need to do a work languages if they haven't already. So I read the Love Languages book, but also communicating in the medium that is most influential to the person you're trying to communicate to. Because my natural communication is IMs and email. If it was up to me, I'd never leave my office. I could IM and email all day long and I'd be perfectly fine like that. And you could IM and email back. But I know there are some people that need that in person or they need a phone call before they'll take that, what I would just do as initiative. And I had to learn that over the years, like where, and I have my reasons for email because I also like it documented. So, because I don't like to go talk to somebody and they're like, yeah, I'll get that to you. And I'll come back and email like, hey, like we just talked about. When you said that thing is going to arrive on Friday, I just wanted to confirm that via email. This is what we discussed. So you can still go back to the mechanism or medium that you're most comfortable with. But I do think you have to adjust, especially as you work your way up the hierarchy. But I would say maybe even a 360. If your manager prefers phone calls, like I have a manager that prefers me to print things, like he prefers to edit for printing. Now, really? Yeah. And I could, we've already had this discussion and we have a tool for editing and he's going to print it out anyway. So I just learned that. Now I print it. Because to me, like I said, the deliverable is what's more important. So the outcome, I want something done, finished and edited. If I send it to him in a Word document or let him know where it is in the software, he'll get to it, but it'll be actually slower than if I just print it, put it on his desk. Hey, can you take a look at this?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about if that falls in the I don't know if that falls in the managing up bucket. Have you heard that term?
I have.
Like basically you need to be able to anticipate certain things about your manager, how they do things, how they work most effectively. If there are things that they're slower about or that you see a deficiency in that's going to cause you delays in getting done what you need to get done, being able to go to that person or finesse them into providing you what you need at the time that you need it. And so this is a simple thing. You know, you could do the send the email and then wait 3 or 4 days like, oh, he'll get to it when he gets to it and then find yourself scrambling at the deadline. Or like you said, you know that the person likes to print stuff out. They may take a look at it on the way home and you have what you need by the next morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we had a couple other that were here, but I actually think that these would be good for a follow-up conversation. And maybe we might even have a couple of additional things that we would add to the list. So we can hold that until next week. Is there anything else that you want to add at this point?
No, that sounds like a plan.
All right, cool, cool. So I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. So, of course, again, if you're enjoying the show, we encourage you to sign up for our email list at paychecksandbalances.com/email. If we're putting out a digital product or a guide and we want to get that to our email list first, these are the folks that it'll go to. And also, if you're enjoying the show, make sure you drop by on iTunes, Stitcher, well, mainly iTunes, and leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast. Also, make sure you say a few words about the show. Really helps us with the rankings, the ratings, and reaching more people, which is the goal since what we're trying to do here is help people. And so we did receive a 5-star review already from Paul Fly. So Paul, appreciate this. And this one says helpful, informative, and real. Longtime follower of TGOS. So that's Two Guys on One Show for those people who are just discovering us for the first time. Also following Paychecks and Balances, Rich and Wim provide great insight through various perspectives, some that intertwine between the two and others that are just their own while providing great tips, insight. They also keep it real. Yeah, we keeps it real here, fam. No sugarcoating it, whether it's about job transition, career goals, money, or even just life in general. Keep up the great work, guys. So, Paul, appreciate you for getting in there first with the 5-star reviews. And if you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review for instructions on how to leave us something there in iTunes. So, anything else?
They can find us on Twitter, the social medias, at PayBalances, yes, and Facebook.com/PaychecksAndBalances as well. You can leave comments, questions, concerns as well, but preferred comments and questions.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have things that you'd rather email us, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. So if you have listener questions, things maybe you want us to answer on the show, which we're going to have another segment about that that's going to be out as well, please do use that email address again, info@paychecksandbalances.com. So again, thanks for listening. Until next episode, next week, whenever we drop it in, I was going to say drop it like it's hot, but that's not really what we want to do. Until then, be safe. We out. Peace.